Good afternoon. You're listening to Wavelength on Resonance 104.4 FM. I'm William English, and today's guest is Mathieu Copeland. Good afternoon, Mathieu. Thank you very much for coming in.
Good afternoon, William.
Mathieu is a curator, an art curator. Puts on an exhibition, a large exhibition called Voids. Was that at the Pompidou?
I was at the Pompidou, yeah, in the Kunsthalle Bern. Right. Afterwards, subsequently.
Yeah. And since then, I think since speaking to you last, you've also curated an exhibition called Suicide.
Alan Vega, actually. Alan Vega.
Sorry.
Yeah, no, that's all right. That was one half of Suicide only. No, it was all of the arts realized by Alan Vega ever since the late 1960s up to, pretty much nowadays, really,
right.
At the Museum of Contemporary Arts in Lyon, in France. And, I thought he made it, well, on a personal note, it was, first of all, a delight and a pleasure to work with Alan. But also, I love the idea of passing on from the void to suicide. I thought there was something quite telling there.
Yes. Well, it sort of fits in with the ongoing theme of autodestructive art, because I think the last time you were on the show was with Gustav Metzger and Clive Philpott.
Absolutely, yeah.
Talking about Gustav and mostly his work.
Mm-hmm.
What else have you done since we spoke last?
Well, there was just a show which closed a couple of them. I think that was about a month and a half ago in Geneva, where at the space called Live in Your Head, which is a university gallery there.
Oh yeah.
And the show was called A Choreographed Polyphony, for which I invited. That's the university where I also teach, and so I worked with the students and I worked with five invited artists, including Tom Johnson, the wonderful minimalist musician, Kenneth Goldsmith, the American celebrated American poet, Frank Lebovici, and Irena Thomasin, to all work together and make, first of all, another volume of an exhibition to Hear Red, which is a series of ongoing books. I've been realizing exhibition as books that started about a year ago, and actually for which I realized the third volume for the show, which just opened in London. But for that show in Geneva, really what we wanted to do was to invite artists to each make a piece for three voices. And so during the whole time of the gallery, the whole time of the show, the gallery was completely empty, but there was always constantly three persons there reading from the book. The reading of the book took exactly the number of hours that the gallery was being opened for. So really a choreographed polyphony as a reading happening in space.
Right.
So that was one of the shows I worked on lately.
Is this the show you won the award for?
No, that was another show.
Let's hear that then.
Yeah, that was the show that I curated this past summer, this past August, in a wonderful gallery in Lausanne, in Switzerland, called Circuit, and it's a show I co-curated together with Philippe de Crozat. And there, what we wanted to do is actually the same. Another question that I asked here in the show in London, but what we wanted to do at the time there was really to ask ourselves the question of drawing, what is drawing now, and how we can work with the drawing, and what is the reproduction of a drawing, and what is its value. So therefore, we invited. And we had more than 80 artists and all working on them, on drawings. And it really ranged from, Antonin Artaud to Alan Vega again, to Kurt Seligman, Ad Reinhardt, all the way to very young, like Carl Longfist or Emma Bjornspa. It was really on, really, really open, really, really beautiful. And that was the one for which we won.
Yeah. Now, ostensibly, the reason I invited you here today is because you have an exhibition in London which just started
2 days ago.
Today, 2 days ago.
Yeah.
Yeah, because the opening was
Wednesday.
You're
right. It started
night.
Yesterday then, yeah.
It started yesterday. And that is on at the, what is it, the David Roberts
Art Foundation, absolutely. Yeah.
David Roberts Art Foundation, which is 111 Great Titchfield Street.
Indeed, yeah.
London.
Yep.
The title for this is Studies for an Exhibition. And it runs for 66 days.
Absolutely, yep.
For which apparently there is no particular reason. Just happens to be a round figure or something. Not such a round figure.
Well, a nice figure to say 66. Well, 26. No, I thought one of the things that I always work with as soon as I get given an invitation to curate a show is the time of that show. That's something that I really care for. Because I always criticize them institutions for all of the same thing, which is the first thing that they give you is a calendar. and you work from that calendar. So you're a block within a, within other blocks, and that block lasted 66 days. Right. So I guess that's one of the reasons why we I put a slight emphasis on that number, right. which like you, I thought was beautiful.
Yeah, yeah. And this is a group show.
Yeah, it's a group show.
And is it, you have a kind of emphasis on self-destructive art and destructive art to some extent, is that fair?
Oh, of course. I mean, it's been ever so influential on me. That is for sure. And also the concepts of the void and nothingness, which one would say stem after the idea of autodestructive art, is something I've always been very fond of and played with, either conceptually or quite literally when working with Gustav Metzger. And no, it's true that, and that was one of the things I was very cared for, what I cared for when I first started to work on that very show, Studies for an Exhibition. That was really much the idea, very much the idea, not to so much try to do a show as so to say, but really trying to do, to define a show through different different angles. So that's why I call it Studies for an Exhibition, really playing the plural in order to define the singular, trying to look at an object, a conceptual object, an exhibition, so to say, from different point of views, different through different lines of time, through, of course, and with the artist and with their work, and how that could we could all, through them, either envisage a show, which a show that has passed, re-envisage a complete show by remaking one, bootleg version of a show, or trying to give hints of shows that could be and should be really realized.
So is it a bit like a sort of an absence of an exhibition?
Oh, yeah.
It's very like a kind of an attempt at perhaps in the way that Godard attempted cinema.
Yeah, oh, Godard attempted as well during his own retrospective at the Centre Pompidou. Attempts, I think, is very exciting. That's, I think, it just gives more freedom in a way to think about it. It's really trying to envisage what could be that conceptual element that we work with, exhibitions themselves. How, when do they take form, and what if from the onset, that is, from the title of the show itself, we say, well, there shall be one, but we're not quite sure how, which one, or which form it will take. The freedom it will leave us will put back an emphasis on the idea of the possibilities. Or again, something I rather enjoyed lately was the idea of studies, how we can try to put forward the studies of an element to be.
Does it suggest that there's a dissatisfaction with something that is completely finished?
Always, yes, of course, yeah. I mean, one of the great lines that I was extremely influenced with as I started working was by Michel Clora, the French curator, and who happens to be the brother of Daniel Buren, who wrote, when he curated a show in the very early 1980s, that an exhibition shouldn't be finished when it starts. It shouldn't be over when it starts.
It shouldn't be
over when it begins.
Right.
And so I've always enjoyed that, that if you just dare to present set of dead objects, can be very interesting from an historical point of view, but I'd rather create an object in motion.
Right.
An object in movement.
Yeah.
And something that is unsteady in time and unstable in time.
And it's sort of important from your point of view that the gallery in question is a charitable institution and not a commercial
absolutely,
gallery.
Absolutely, yeah. No, absolutely. There was a personal point that I've made sure to stick on with for the past 7-8 years is really to only work with public institutions, and when I say public, it's I should have said rather non-for-profit institutions. So in order to
but you do get paid as a curator, of course.
I do get paid,
and this is how you earn your living
as a curator. Yes.
But does that mean that do the commercial galleries you think would they pay more for an exhibition?
Oh, definitely, and then you get a cut of the sales, if anything sells.
Oh, is that right?
Oh yeah,
really. The curator gets a percentage.
Oh, yeah,
of the sales of the artwork sold in an exhibition.
Yeah,
I didn't know that.
Oh, no, you do. You would do indeed, yeah. And that's why I keep on saying that. Of course, it's not a very commercial move to do such a thing, quite literally, so to say. But no, I would much rather work that way for many different reasons. And one of them is, first of all, which is what I put forward in the way that I work and in the show that I do, which is the artist themselves and the relationship with the artist. And the line of thought, the line of working that I've always stand with is I want to work with art and not with the money generated by the art. Or the possibilities of the money being generated by the arts. And the commercial institution really very much infringe upon Well, upon a reading, I guess, in a way, and also it's all different. It's all different contexts. I mean, I thoroughly enjoy friends of mine working in with our ways, and I go to see what they do all the time, of course, as we all do. But I read.
But this is part of Gustav Metzger's sort of philosophy as well, isn't it?
It has been, of course, yeah.
Was that an influence on you, or did you?
Very much indeed. Yeah. Yes, very much indeed. I mean, we have to remember that Gustav's last show in the Commercial Gallery was from September 1960. So really? I think that's a pretty thorough really? Engagement with the fight against the art system and the commodification of the arts.
Right.
But also it's the philosophy that one has to... I guess there's one thing to serving a system, which we all do, which is that of the art. And I'm happy to engage with that. I'm not happy to engage with serving a system, which is that of the selling of the art. The commodification of the art object is one thing, but this is not my thing, clearly not.
Well, let's talk about the exhibition that's on at the David Roberts Foundation at the moment. It's quite a large group show. It includes Gustav Metzger, of course.
Indeed, yes, indeed.
I had to sort of fly around somewhat at the opening. it was pretty busy. I haven't been back to have a careful look at it.
Oh, don't worry.
I did particularly notice there were some paintings that had been sent through the post.
Absolutely. Well, I think that's, again, what I wanted to do with that show, and that's why it's called Studies for an Exhibition, is really to play with the time of the show. So we mentioned already with the 66 days of the show, which is the time of the exhibition itself. But also, I was caring a lot to try to think about how we could do an exhibition which is completely unstable in time and unstable in form as well. Mm. And that was the reason why I invited Karin Sander, the wonderful, celebrated German artist who lives in Berlin, who had barely ever been shown here in the UK, if ever. Mm. And I really cared for that series of work that she's been making ever since 2004, which is a series that she called The Mailed Paintings, where she actually just mailed the painting through the post, unprotected, and uncreated, of course. Yeah. And so therefore, it's when they go from one venue to the other that they acquire the reality, they acquire the marking, they acquire the, really what they become. And since it's a process in motion as well, it never stops. Right. So... And they're beautiful because the title of these works actually, it's where places where they go to, the cities where they've been to and traveled.
But they have kind of like almost blue. Some of them have like a blue tape around them, or what do you call it? With a barcode and
absolutely.
So on. So they start to look like abstract.
They do,
contrived abstract paintings.
And they started as white monochromes.
right. But they've sort of developed I suppose you might call it a patina. It shows the passage of time.
Absolutely. That's what I wanted. And furthermore, what we decided to do together with Karin is not only we will be showing these ones, of course, but we will send them back to her, and then she'll send them back to us again. And during the whole length of the show.
Right.
And it's not... the reasons being because I really want to... I want to see what happens. I want to see these paintings in development, in motion, how they actually reveal their own identities, how they actually... Well, not identity, themselves, really. How they become the paintings that they are. And I was extremely excited with this unstable element, this...
Which one was Gustav's piece? I didn't see
it. The piece, and actually, which makes a very beautiful echo to that of Karin. As you enter the gallery, you have a set of about, I think, maybe 12 or 13 posters for the exhibition This Is Tomorrow from 1956.
Oh, yes, in the window.
Absolutely.
Right.
And so these actually...
So this is from This Is Tomorrow, which was at the Whitechapel Gallery in 1956.
Yeah, co-curated with Richard Hamilton.
Which was a sort of seminal exhibition of the independent group, Richard Hamilton.
Indeed,
and people like that.
Indeed, and it was a show that Gustav saw back in the days in 1956, and it was and he became extremely influenced by that show. It really opened him new ways of thinking, I'd say. And so one day, Gustav went back to London. He was living in Kingsley at the time. So he came back to London, tried to gather as many paintings as he could. As many posters as he could, sorry.
Oh, right.
And then bring them back to Kings Lynn, where he was running a shop there, an antique shop, a second-hand shop, where he used to put on group exhibitions.
Right.
And where he did actually just before a beautiful group exhibition with Paolo Zi, Hartwell, and Turnbull. And so at the time of This Is Tomorrow, he decided to completely cover up the window of his shop with these posters that he'd found.
Oh, right.
And so I really thoroughly enjoyed first of all, the idea of that piece, which is first, coming from an artist, an appropriation of an existing material, but also coming from somebody who put up an exhibition. It's an exhibition of posters where they are the best to be seen, which is in the window.
Yeah.
But it also played upon so many different levels, showing that we're not quite sure whether we're in front of a display or an exhibition or just a means for him at the time during the show to advertise that very show.
Yeah,
so I really enjoyed that that unsteadiness there in thoughts and in concept. And it happened so that we found the original posters that Gustav used at the time quite recently, very recently. So I invited him to somehow...
I presume those are reproductions, or not?
These are reproductions. Yeah. We have the originals, yeah. but they were just too fragile. No, it was just too fragile. They would not have lasted a day. And since I really cared for making that piece and playing upon, anyway, the rest of the show, there's a whole section playing with the idea of reproduction and discussing what is the original, what is a reproduction, and what is the status of one and the other. I thought we could allow ourselves, and it was Gustav's decision also to invite me to do this reproduction, which I was very happy to do. And furthermore, he offers another question that the work doesn't offer himself. Because my question really was very much about this was tomorrow, then what happens if we advertise the show which has passed in a show called Studies for an Exhibition? So I like this kind of ambiguity. But of course, because they're not the posters themselves, they also has the nature, the question of the nature.
And downstairs in the basement, there's a whole wall covered in sort of like photocopies of other artworks.
Yeah.
And in the middle of them, there are also some originals. There's a Lichtenstein print.
There's a Lichtenstein, a Bridget Riley.
Yeah.
There's a Peter Blake and Andy Warhol. No, what I, exactly, again, coming back from the title, where, as I told, I may have said before, one of them, I always believe that in the title of a show, you actually lay out the whole program of that show. And when I wanted to, when I was thinking about the idea of studies for an exhibition, I first of all took that name from another exhibition, which was a 1964 show at the ICA here in London called Study for an Exhibition on Violence in Contemporary Arts, curated by Roland Penrose. And I was extremely influenced, and I was also very interested in the influence that show had. So I got hold of the catalogue, which was wonderful, because as many of the catalogues in the time, that catalogue was on a checklist of everything which was on display in that show. So what I decided to do is to actually secure all of these copies of all of these works, because also when the all the people who've seen the show at the time told me, it was actually composed of 80% of the exhibition itself was photographs of these works and not the works. So it was already playing. It was trying to use artworks in order to highlight or to talk about a theme. Right. And I am not interested at all in theme shows myself. Right. I always think that it's a great way to abuse the artwork and to make them say something that you want them to say. Whereas what I was very interested by that was the fact that you use images in order for them to talk about violence in contemporary arts. And I was interested in trying to secure copies of, anyway, in a show, which were already copies. Mm-hmm. But since I was doing that show in a foundation which has its own collection, whenever there was an artwork within the collection by the artist mentioned in that original show from 1964, we would replace the reproduction by an original.
Right.
And so that's why it was very exciting. For instance, Peter Blake was showing a wrestler piece then at the time in 64. But in the collection, they had a Peter Blake from 95, which was a woman cycling. So I thought that was perfect in a panel which was discussing sports.
Now, on the way in, there are various pamphlets and leaflets and booklets and typed sheets on the table.
Yeah.
One of which is something called Some Definitions of Anarchy, which lists 73 quotes all on the subject of anarchism, and then credits all of them from various people. Alexander Berkman, Emma Goldman, Rudolf Rocker, and various other ones who I'm not familiar with. How does that relate to this exhibition?
Well, again, what I cared for was not only
compiled the list, basically?
So it's Elena Bajo. Elena Bajo.
And is this a contribution to the exhibition?
It's part of a contribution for the show, absolutely.
Okay.
What Elena Bajo has been developing a practice which has been ever so fascinating to me, which is an art of recycling, so to say. And I was very excited about how we could, by inviting her to contribute to an exhibition based on the impermanency of time and something that tries to define itself as it happens, Studies for an Exhibition, how she could be given the conceptual space, the mental space, the actual physical space, in order to engage through her practice of sculpture with an element in passing and that element in motion. Mm. And so she both did a sculpture in the middle of the gallery, which is by raiding the warehouse of the collection and taking everything which had been discarded, so namely broken stretchers and things like that, and reorganized them in a temporary installation, which will again be thrown away at the end of the show, I guess. Mm-hmm. But also she was very interested in the idea that by reassembling them, you just give them a temporary life, but afterwards they acquire another set of temporary lives as elements, mm-hmm. as object, as just being recycled or so.
Yep.
And so we're playing upon this idea of anarchy, really, the anarchy of the art object, so to say, but also opening up and trying to say, how can we actually gather definitions on this? So to remind ourselves and herself about that impermanency of time, impermanency of the object, but also by inviting the viewers of the people coming to the gallery to write their own definition of anarchy.
Right.
And which in turn, I mean, we could talk for hours. I mean, I could talk for hours about you that show. But right. It's very exciting to see also the piece by Emma Bjornspar, who decided to do a piece which I fell completely in love with, called The Commercial Waste Collection, which is perfect for a foundation with a collection, I thought. Yeah. And again, coming back to the attack on the art systems, what she decided to do to save all the rubbish generated by the making of a show and by putting them outside and to have that kind of a gradually accumulating sculpture as the gallery generate their own waste, with that own waste being put on show. So again, this is where all these kind of different elements trying to define what could be.
Right, right. Okay. Yeah, interestingly, that played into I just bought this book called, it's just come out, published by Verso, called Springtime, The New Student Rebellions.
Uh-huh.
And there is a section called Genealogy of the Book Block.
Uh-huh.
Have you heard of the book block?
No.
I hadn't heard of them either. Apparently these people, they make sort of reproductions of books.
Oh, excellent.
Like shields. And they sort of put themselves at the forefront of demonstrations, holding up what is with the title of a book on it, and they use it sort of like a shield.
Yeah.
And is that a John Latham in the basement of your
exhibition? There is indeed, yeah, absolutely, because the last piece in the show from 1964, the studies on violence in contemporary arts, ended up with a John Latham.
Uh-huh.
And it turned out that there
who
was...
Who burned books, of course.
Who slashed books, who made a practice working with books, that's for sure.
Right.
And that was a very exciting element for us to actually find that beautiful work in the collection, to put it on display where it was as part of the original show, as the last piece, that a kind of a punctuation piece. And of course, it plays ever so well in terms of history, and the history that we celebrate and enjoy, which is that of Gustav Metzger, or again David Medalla, who gave a beautiful performance for the opening.
Yep.
But also it's very interesting when you say the reproduction of books, because I invited the young artists Victor Costales and Giulia Rometti to do a piece for the show, and what they decided to do is they found during their ongoing trip in South America these temporary libraries, which are just accumulation of books and a photocopy, so people can photocopy the books that they want and take them with them. So a great distribution of knowledge again, for which they based their piece upon, which is again a piece generated that way, which is being given away, handed out as you enter the gallery.
Right.
Or again, if you mentioned.
So it sort of links up quite well with this book block.
Yeah, absolutely.
Thing, which is a sort of current thing, which derives from Rome, the Wombles and the people in the white overalls, and now they've devised this book block thing, which seems to be catching on, and did occur in London in December, though I didn't see it. It didn't seem to be reported anywhere.
Oh yeah,
but I find it interesting because there's images of police literally clubbing what appear to be large books with the various titles on. Can you read the title?
Yeah, of course. Yeah, we have.
Don't miss the microphone.
La Repubblica by Platon, the Constitution, the Italian Constitution, the Deleuze book, Melville book. No,
the police are seen sort of clubbing the titles of books, which is quite a nice irony.
And creating the
Okay, we're running out of time. Thanks very much to Mathieu Copeland, whose curated exhibition, Studies for an Exhibition, is on at the David Roberts Art Foundation, 111 Great Titchfield Street. Mm-hmm. Started yesterday and runs for 66 days.
Until the 11th of June.
And we'll play out with some Hermann Nitsch, which I think...
That's necessary.
Okay, thank you very much, Mathieu.
Thank you so much.
Here.